It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And that's why my cat likes to have sex with stuffed animals and prefers that you watch.
Is that what's happening right now?
Yes. Yes. He, who has never had sex and who is fixed, is doing what he thinks sex is. And he does it to his stuffed animals.
Okay.
Yeah, and he wants an audience. I don't know when it is. It's creepy.
So how was your anniversary?
It will have been good. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast. The only podcast in the world where we can talk about future things that have already happened.
Do you know what happened on your
anniversary? I'm Tony.
Do you know what happened on your anniversary this year? I'm William, and this is episode 269. Do you know what happened on your anniversary this year?
By this point, I will have known.
No, something that you will only know if I tell you.
What?
My father got engaged.
On my anniversary?
Because that's also his birthday, and he's going to propose to his girlfriend on his birthday.
Oh, my goodness.
Which, for us, is this Sunday, but for people listening, was this past Sunday.
So you were not spoiling anything, so.
Nope.
What did she say?
I already know what she's going
to
say.
Is this? To me, this is like, don't refer to a woman as pregnant unless you are 100% sure. I'm like, don't propose unless you're pretty darn sure.
I think it's a certainty.
But it's also one of those things where both of those are statements that every rational person would agree with, and yet tons of people don't follow either of them.
I suppose, but...
It's always amazing to me. Because, yeah, I'm like, I would never have, if we hadn't already talked about it a whole bunch, and it was really one of those sort of just waiting for the right moment kind of things. I would never have just been like, well, I hope this works. I mean, because even the part where I knew... It's still a little, pause. I'm like, what if she, something happened today?
Yep. Yep.
I left my underwear on the floor. yeah, because in our version, I think we were already living together.
He's only known her a couple months. But you know, when you're in your 70s.
You're like, what am I risking?
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly
I'm right. Just really hoping that his proposal does not include the words, tired of eating alone.
Not only are you not really risking anything, but what you are risking by not doing it is that...
Paying for assisted care.
Or whatever. There's just no point to wait.
Did I send you the article of, what's his name, the senator, the retired senator who lost his wife at age 70 and now is marrying a man?
Oh, no.
Oh, I should have sent it to you. This guy wrote an essay piece, basically, that was in some online magazine. And it's somebody, some famous senator. And he was retired, and he lost his wife in a bad battle with cancer. Mm. And it was mostly in response to gay rights issues that I think he wrote it. But it was about how, you know, he lost her, and he never would have thought he could find anybody else, and he did, and it turned out to be a man, and it turned out to be a much younger man, but they've been together for 15 years now, and they're very happy, and he doesn't feel it takes anything. He still misses his wife terribly, and it's just different, and it's not, you know, it wasn't that he was secretly gay all those years or anything like that. It was he found a person that he loved, and then he found another person that he loved. It's really beautiful. It was like, it almost made me cry, and I can't cry generally. So, I'm sorry, I should find it and send it to you. I would have thought I had.
No,
it is really touching.
Don't think I saw that.
Yes, kitten, you want to snuggle now that you're done having sex with that stuffed animal? Alright, I'll take what I can get. For those of you just joining us, we've been here for a week. because this is part two. Here's how the show normally works. It's odd that you're showing up now, but I'll tell you anyway. We have a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, cool people like yourselves, write into that address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, little questions, comments, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifest physically within the hat itself. It's evergreen servants, draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour. The reason we are doing this now is as you are listening to this, because you all listen to it immediately when it's posted, I am driving my wife to meet her sister, and she is going off for a week, and I'm going to be here alone with the cats.
But we like to have our episodes posted every Thursday, so if we're not going to be available on a given Thursday, we try to record ahead of time.
Yes. Which reminds me, if it's at all advantageous to record at a different time the week Trish is gone, I can probably make it work. So keep that in mind.
Well, you might have to remind me of that.
Yeah. She's going off to it. So hopefully by this point, I've beaten Fallout 4 and written a fair bit more in my book.
Yeah, that would be great.
I'm hoping both of those things have happened, but we'll see. What has happened is we went... I can tell you because she's out of the house at the moment because it's kind of a surprise.
Okay.
She knows, here's what she knows. She knows we're going away overnight for our anniversary and she knows it's in Dubuque.
Okay.
That's it. I am covered in cats. Why do I, you take one of these?
No, thank you.
I have so many cats. Yes, Ezzy, I've seen your butt. It's lovely. Move along. All right. We are going to stay at the Julien Inn,
mm-hmm.
which is the fancy place right in the middle of downtown there, yep. which I've never been to.
That is a fancy place.
We are going to stay there in a premier suite, which is not their fanciest because they have something called the Al Capone suite that's just huge. I'm like, it's silly for two people to do that, so I didn't do that. But this is the premier suite, which is almost as good and I think has a whirlpool in it. And we are getting a couples massage.
Oh.
We were going to get a few things, but the scheduling didn't work out with the spa.
Okay.
Because we're only there for the one night, so. So that should be cool.
Nice.
Little romantic getaway, just for a little bit.
Yeah.
And then the day after this airs, or maybe the Saturday after this airs, I'm going to go see Keanu.
Mm-hmm.
Very excited about that. By now, my wife has seen... Actually, at the time you are listening, my wife is just about to go see Civil War.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I'm dropping her off with her sister before they drive away that night, they're going to go see it in the theaters in the Quad Cities. Because they are very excited, even though they are on opposing sides.
Of the Civil War?
Yes.
Who is pro Captain America?
The sister.
Oh.
And to be fair, I believe the producer is not so much pro Iron Man as pro Robert Downey Jr. Which I can understand the conundrum because I'm pretty sure I'm Team Cap, but I know off camera I'm way more into Downey Jr. Which, when you put it that way, just sounds like some sort of detergent. Clean your clothes with Downey Jr. I think I'm mixing Downey and Absorbing Jr. That was a detergent, right?
I don't know.
Such a weird name.
Penny Dreadful is back. Well.
Is this, what, season 3?
I think so, yes. Mm. It's back May 1st. So.
Hopefully by now I've seen more of Winona.
Yeah.
We've seen 3 episodes now.
Well, that's all there is. No, there's a 4th one, isn't there?
Yeah, and tomorrow there'll be a... Okay. Tomorrow, a.k.a. 6 days ago, there'll be another one.
Well, we're caught up on them.
Oh, I didn't say this last time. So the night before we, last night for us, 8 nights ago for the rest of you, it was date night, and it was Trisha's date night, and part of that involved her showing me the first two episodes of the series Documentary Now. You familiar with the series?
I've heard of it, yeah.
I had seen it in passing on IFC, and it's basically it's a series of mockumentaries, of just half-hour segment mockumentaries, done by Fred Armisen.
Oh, I've actually seen one
Bill
of them.
Bill Hader.
I've actually seen one of them.
And what is interesting is they are specifically satirizing specific actual documentaries.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I would have found it funnier than I did if I knew that.
It's hard to tell because I'm having the same thing and that I haven't seen them. The very first one is a satire of Grey Gardens, which is a very old documentary about a daughter and mother who are living in this house that basically should be abandoned, and they're trying to pressure them to leave, but they won't, and so people go and sort of interview them. And my wife, who is very familiar with it, says it barely counts as satire. Like, a lot of it is just reenactment of actual things. But then it does different. And it's very dry comedy. I'm a big fan of the mockumentary. I don't know why exactly, but like Christopher Guest and stuff, I always loved those. And I'm also a big fan of Bill Hader's and a small fan of Fred Armisen's. I think he's incredibly talented. Sometimes he annoys the shit out of me. And so we saw that one, and then the second episode is a takeoff on those obnoxious Vice Gonzo style documentaries that they have nowadays, where they just send a couple of hipsters into a foreign country and they like bug people to try and get interesting footage and do risky things they really shouldn't. And that was pretty amusing too. But yeah, I enjoyed it. And they got Helen Mirren. She introduces them. The conceit of it is that it's this documentary company that has been making these for 50 years,
right,
and this is like a retrospective, and she does it, and it's awesome because they clearly just said, do it like you were really introducing a thing. Like, there's no hint of a smile, there's no weird little, like, she's just, it's almost like they lied to her.
It is almost like that, yeah.
And I mean, I'm sure not. She's a consummate actress. She just does it. But it was fun. I don't know what's going on, but Trisha's seen the third episode, and she does not want to watch it again, so I'm going to have to watch that by myself.
But there are only like four of them, right?
I think there's seven in the first season, getting that a second season. They're very short. Without commercials, it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah, but we just didn't really like the first one, so we didn't keep watching.
I was enjoying it and considered it good satire. It took a weird turn, which I found odd, but I enjoyed it. And the second one I really enjoyed, especially because Jack Black plays the head of the company who's just sort of in between narrating what happened. And he does the perfect, like, NouveauRiche.com billionaire douchebag. Just complete with, like, the Scott Ian-type beard and that kind of shit. It was pretty cool. But we'll see how much more of that I see. All right, so did you do anything during this week that hasn't happened yet?
I've already talked about everything that I think is going to happen. And we're not going back for Dad's birthday because he's already got these weekend plans. So that'll be this coming weekend. When people hear this, the weekend coming up, we'll probably go.
She said yes.
Oh, I'm sure she did.
No, I think that's going to be the title of the episode.
So yeah, I mean, nothing else really to talk about. So I guess we should draw from the hat.
All right.
Rather than having a bunch of silence on the... Because you hate when that happens.
That's good radio.
Yeah, that's what you like to say. Jasmine.
I've heard of her. She's a Disney princess, right? A whole new world.
Presidential candidate who you think has the best policies. Presidential candidate who you think would be... a disaster for the country.
God damn it, Jasmine. What the hell is wrong with you? I'm going to take a nap. You wake me up when you're done.
No, I don't really. I mean, I think everybody knows I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I mean,
this is fun, though. Of all candidates, all parties, if you were voting right now, who would you be voting for? And you just get to pick everybody.
I really don't know yet.
That's not good. You should work on that.
I mean, it's quite a while, you know, got till November. So I don't really know. It's not going to be a Republican or a Democrat. I know.
In his heart of hearts.
I know people want to think, or do think, I should say, that Donald Trump, for example, would be a disaster for our country. But obviously, I don't have any more faith in whoever the Democratic nominee is going to be.
You did this, Jasmine. You did this.
Now, what about Bernie Sanders, I guess? I mean, out of the candidates that are in the major parties, he probably offends me the least. But I'm not personally a democratic socialist either. So there's obviously some things that he would stand for that I might not be in favor of. But then again, he's running for president, and most of the problems with our country is something that Congress has to fix, not the president. So that's another thing I'm not really particularly concerned about. You know, a lot of the things that need to be fixed in our country are really not going to be about the president. The main thing is, and we've talked about this before, for me, when it comes to president, is foreign issues of foreign policy. And for the main candidates, in the Democratic and Republican Party, I suppose I would not feel uncomfortable or scared if Bernie Sanders was sitting across the table from heads of state. Or whatever. And by contrast, I would pretty much feel uncomfortable with Ted Cruz or Donald Trump being across the table from heads of state, either one. But I'm not sure any more than I would be concerned about Hillary Clinton being across the table from heads of state, because I don't really, you know, she has been, you know, the Secretary of State. We kind of know what the way that she deals with foreign policy, and it doesn't work for me. How Barack Obama deals with foreign policy.
Guys, it's Jasmine's fault.
Now listen, you know, we had a question about critiquing Barack Obama's presidency and whether or not we were satisfied with it. And we listed some things that we weren't satisfied with. And when I listened to it later, I thought, you know, I hope people don't get the impression that everything on the list is equal. Like, you know, not closing Guantanamo Bay, a few other things, but also the drone strikes was just kind of on the list. It's like, no, that probably, you know, these aren't in order of of offensiveness. I mean, the drone strikes could reasonably be considered, and I'm sure a lot of people would argue with this, but could reasonably be considered like war crimes. I mean, you know, this is serious. The people who object to what Barack Obama's administration has done with drone strikes. So that's not a small or trivial thing. And insofar as that seems like something that Hillary Clinton is also in favor of, it doesn't strike me as being any better as anything that Ted Cruz or Donald Trump would do. So at the same time, you know, presidential power, as even though it's been expanded way beyond what it should be, and it's abused by several of the past presidents, it still is somewhat limited. And I still have to have some faith that, you know, we can elect a Congress that's going to do reasonable things. So I'm mostly concerned about that aspect of our system of government. I don't know why you're not saying anything. Why are you just letting me drone on and on? Because you know that's boring.
So if you guys want more of this, go to the blog, because this is where Jasmine and William talk all the time like this.
Plus, I'm an anarchist, so really, it's a moot point. Who I think has the best policies, right?
If we are talking the major people involved, which at this point I think I can confidently say either Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton will be the Democratic nominee, and either Ted Cruz or Donald Trump will be the Republican nominee, and of the two, whoever they end up being, one of them will end up being president.
So one of these four people will end up being president.
Exactly. Taking all of that, and given that I couldn't tell you about a third-party candidate right now if my life depended on it, and I don't imagine I will vote for one, my intention is to vote for Clinton. If something happens and Sanders gets the nomination, I sure as hell will vote for him. I am very much opposed to both Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, and which of them if I had to pick which one to get stuck with, a week or two ago I would have said Trump is the one who freaks me out. Now I'm not, I mean, they both do, but for different reasons, yeah, so it's tricky. And that's all I'll say about all that. See, I think this, first of all, this is not stuff I like talking about. Second of all, it bores a lot of our listeners. And third of all, we've done it before. I mean, I don't know. So I'm not into it.
Okay.
And if you guys are, like I said, go to the blog. And I mean, if you guys keep asking, we'll keep answering. But I'm not going to, I feel like anything I would add to this now would be shit that we already said about it. And I'm not a super informed voter, so if you get right down to brass tacks of who I would vote for and not vote for, it probably has to do with weird things like what suits they wore, I don't know. Oh. This one is, anonymous.
Okay.
Suspect this will have been answered in the interim, but, okay, first of all, anonymous listener, thank you. Thank you for the awareness, at least. Well, okay, the semi-awareness, because then we got the follow-up. But, Alan Rickman was an amazing actor. Discuss. I don't disagree.
They thought we would have talked about it because of this.
Which I feel like we...
Recent passing.
I don't know that we spent much
really
time on
not.
It.
We really did not.
We haven't really spent much time on Bowie or Prince or any of that.
No.
Or China. Sorry, Joni Lawler. It's not Lawler. That's the southern wrestler. It's Lawler or something. I don't know. I try and remember it because after her wrestling career, she did not like being referred to as China. So I was trying to get it right, but... but yeah, we haven't had a lot to talk about these. Alan Rickman was a weird one. Because both Prince and Bowie, I'm kind of sad, but I'm also just like, they already gave us, like, at least half a dozen great historic people's worth of cool shit already. It's not, like, I don't really have this, like, too soon thing with them. I mean, it would have been awesome to see what else happened, but I'm like, really? They did their part. And I'm just grateful to have what I have. I mean, obviously, I don't want them to die, but...
No, I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, it doesn't... It's not the personal tragedy of a death. I get that a little bit with Rickman, but I think... Wait, are you playing with Twiglet's toy? The little squirrely toy that Coffee got? What are you doing? Or is that an actual mouse?
No.
Okay, good. Whew. That was going to be my next thought. Yeah, no, Coffee, when she was watching them, got them the toy. For Twiglet, I think he was playing it, but as he likes it too. Anyway, there's just this sense, and now, this is the thing, it's not like I knew a lot about Alan Rickman. I'd seen a lot of movies, but I didn't know much about him or anything. Apparently, he just was a really awesome guy. And I had that... which is funny, because he plays such... a lot of terrible characters. A really problematic and disturbing Sheriff of Nottingham in Prince of Thieves, which is really the only memorable thing about Prince of Thieves, other than Men in Tights. Not the concept of movie that was parodying.
Wasn't he the bad guy in the first Die Hard movie?
Yes. Oh. That was all. In fact, but that's the weird thing. That one, either that movie or right around that movie, was his first gig. Like, he came to acting way late. And apparently, it looked like that served him well. He was not very celebrity-minded, per se. I mean, he was very, very caring and giving individual, from what I've learned. And just, he was really funny. But he was, of course, capable of being incredibly amazing and serious and dramatic roles and stuff, but, you know, like, it never, I loved him in Love Actually, and Truly, Madly, Deeply, and of course, I cannot imagine different Professor Snape, full stop, like, he is that role to me, but my favorites are Galaxy Quest and Dogma, where he's sitting there gargling tequila.
Those are both good.
Like, there's just, I don't know. He was funny. He could do it. He had the thing. I don't know. He was just really funny. But he was absolutely an amazing actor. And had so much that he still would have done. Like, I know he was 69, but I'm like, he would have kept acting for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would have, and, you know, he was suited to older roles in a lot of ways. Sure. So I think he would have done
something. In a lot of ways, he was just coming into an era where he would have probably had, you know, some very memorable, maybe in some of his best roles, which is saying a lot because most of his roles were pretty good.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, it is, Bowie is very sad, and Prince is very sad, and Prince is very young. 57.
Yeah. That's just,
I do think the one good thing, so everyone is sort of obsessed with it now, and there's so many retrospectives and people writing things, and I think a lot of people are learning a lot more about Prince than they knew. I've known for a long time that, like, he was such a prolific writer and producer in things that you don't know have anything to do with him, or songs that the most famous version is a cover of it and his was the original and stuff like that. And, like, I didn't know he was from Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
Didn't know that was a thing. Yeah. Didn't know that apparently there is a subgenre of music called the Minnesota sound that he invented. Or the Minneapolis sound, I think it's called.
Yeah.
None of this stuff.
Yep.
Didn't know he started so young, let alone producing so young. Didn't realize how much music he's been making that we didn't know about because he refused to put it on iTunes or anything like that. He released, I believe, 15 albums since 2000.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And just, yeah, it's just kind of amazing. Also, somebody, oh, let me just tell you about this. So, I'm going to tell you a story, and then I'm going to tell you part of why I told you the story. So, thing I read on a fail blog the other day, somebody said, I don't know, they made a joke, which may be too soon, whatever, but they're like, I don't know why everybody's freaking out about losing Prince, because if you put that mustache on Rihanna, she got you covered. And it was a picture of Rihanna with the Prince mustache, and she looked an awful lot like Prince. And then the follow-up is then that she blocked that Twitter user. Rihanna blocked him. But the reason I tell you this is a few days earlier there was a thing, because some girl, based on her, well, the content that you'll know about in a minute, but also based on her picture there, white girl, posted, you can call me if you're a cracker if you want, but I have proof that whiter is more beautiful. And it was two pictures of Rihanna. And I don't know how much was makeup or filters or lighting or what, but in one, Rihanna's skin is much paler.
Okay.
And both of them, in my opinion, she looks quite lovely in both. Okay. They weren't trashy pictures or anything. They were just, I think one of them was like at a red carpet or something. And she looked good. Like, they're both beautiful, I would say. But she did this. She didn't even tag Rihanna in the thing. But the follow-up is her tweeting, OMG, why? What did I do? As Rihanna blocked her. So she can't even follow Rihanna anymore. And we were all like, you know what you did. Don't lie.
So this person was insisting that the picture where her skin was
proof that the more white you are, that white is more beautiful than black. Some racist bullshit, in other words, and was using Rihanna as a thing for it. And I think, I suspect, may have purposely not used Rihanna's name or tagged her because it would be viewed horribly by the African American singer, as with anybody rational, but of course it would there.
What's the name of that woman who got in trouble recently?
Kim Davis.
Huh?
Kim Davis.
For what?
She was the clerk who refused to marry the gay people.
No.
Okay.
The woman who got in trouble recently because it was...
The only woman I know who got in trouble.
It was discovered that she is the child of two white parents who don't have any African...
Oh, who was the American chair of the NAACP or whatever, yeah. And who claims that she self-identifies as black.
Right. Yeah, I forget her name, but the controversy... I mean, basically what her argument is that she didn't lie to anybody or mislead anybody because she self-identifies as black, and to her, being black is not an issue of, you know, race or what you're born with or whatever. And I don't know if she made this comparison or if other people... No, I think she probably made this comparison. Well, I don't know for sure. But very much the same way some people, feel like they're a certain gender or they were born a certain gender that doesn't match their physical, bodies or whatever. And so therefore, if she thinks she's black, then she should be able to say that about herself and people should just accept it. And it shouldn't matter that, you know, from a, I guess, genetics standpoint or whatever, that she's, whether or not she's actually an African-American person.
I think, and I'm going to regret expressing
I probably shouldn't have said it that way, but you know what I mean. What's that?
The door.
But who's there?
I don't know. Maybe it's my food. It's a pretty loud knock. It could just be a terrorist. I don't know. Serial killer. Axe. Please put it over there so I don't smell it too much. I'm going to say something that I feel like I might regret saying later and I might change my mind on later. But this is what I think. This is what I think I believe. I am all for people being able to self-identify however they want. Personally, you know, like if that's your deal where you're like, I feel like I'm black, I on the inside I am black, and you want to say that, okay. I feel that not only is it problematic to do that, but okay, I'm in favor of people doing that. And I don't think it should be necessary but then everybody you run into, you have to specify. Because then sort of what's the point? Because then you're not self-identifying as black, you're self-identifying as a white lady who thinks she should be black. And that's weird. If you identify with that identity, you shouldn't have to asterisk yourself in every interaction. However, if you are actively involved in a group that is specifically designed to deal with the social implications of certain racist institutions and the position of an ethnicity within society, which I feel that the NAACP has that as part of their mandate, arguably, I don't feel like you get to do that without being on. I'm not even saying she couldn't do it. I'm saying I feel like she needed to say that. And here's the thing. I feel like she knew that. Otherwise, you wouldn't work so hard to hide that. And when you did your transgender parallel, that's when I got nervous, and that's why I said I got worried about this. Because I do not think somebody who self-identifies as another sex and eventually reaches a point where they are passable should have to tell everyone that they started off a different sex. However, for example, if you're a trans woman and you are part of a like radicalized lesbian separatist feminist group in an official capacity, I absolutely think you would have to tell them, because it's their group, and some of them are going to have issue with that. Some of them are going to need to deal with that. To some of them, it flies in the face of what their group is about. And I think it is disingenuous and inappropriate to intentionally keep that. It sucks that that's how it has to be.
Well, but here's the question. And I'm going to pose it, whether or not it's a legitimate question. Maybe we can discuss or figure out, or someone else can figure it out. But I think the question that is posed, that at least people think is legitimate, is, and I think this question applies to the transgender example as well as the transracial example, as they're calling it transracial or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do people who are born looking, you know, on superficial examination, looking different than the way they feel on the inside, whatever that means, do they fundamentally have the same experience as people who are born looking that way?
Okay, I would unequivocally say no, of course not.
Well, okay, so then the question becomes, what does that mean? For example, actually, there has been some discussion about this in the transgender community, where trans women have noticed things that about being a woman that they didn't even anticipate, that they didn't realize that, you know, they didn't realize what kind of privileges they were enjoying before they transitioned. They didn't realize some of the things that women have to deal with. So even in spite of always feeling like they were a woman, they weren't having a woman's experience. And in some senses, they were definitely having a man's experience.
Yes. And in some senses, they were having a trans person's experience, which is not the same as what a woman would experience.
Exactly right. Okay.
And
so,
comes with its own things.
So then what some women might argue is that this is, if you have a woman's organization like you were talking about,
it's ostensibly representing the woman's experience.
Yeah, as someone who was born, or even if not necessarily biologically born a woman, was exposed. Like, I mean, you could conceivably have someone who, because this often happens, someone who is born with both sets of organs or whatever, and maybe even without a particular surgical thing being done, but the parents pick something, and so this person is going to be raised as a girl.
Yeah.
Well, that person, regardless of what you think of their genitalia or whatever, is going to have had that experience, because they would have been treated as a girl their whole life.
Yes.
And so this particular group, it might be important to them that this person was raised a girl the whole time, because someone who was raised male for a significant portion of time might not have experienced the same kinds of things. Now, whether that's valid or not, I'm just saying, I think that's the perspective some people would come from in the transgender example. And I think people understand that even more so in the transracial example. In fact, it's barely anything you even have to explain. I mean, most people, their default is, well, this is just wrong that she's doing this. She's not black. You know, her parents are white. She shouldn't be pretending to be black. She's co-opting the black experience. You know, all of this language people have about this woman because of this.
Well, there's a lot of assumption of motive in that situation.
Well, I suppose so.
Whereas in my instance, and this is the weird one I discover, if she wants to start her own African-American rights group or whatever, I'm more okay with that.
Okay, but the question
is... This group existed beforehand,
right.
And therefore... And they existed under a certain assumption, and you are deliberately deceiving them on that assumption.
Okay, but the problem comes when a lot of that same reasoning and those same arguments can be applied to a transgender situation that most people aren't comfortable applying it to that situation.
And that's why I said it makes me nervous.
I think it makes a lot of people nervous.
And that's why I specified lesbian separatist. Because here's the thing also. There's... I think it was Lilith Fair. I don't know. It was either Lilith Fair or something Lilith Fair-esque that was a big concert venue, and they had an island, essentially, out there that was women-only. It was going to be a women-only space. And it became a major controversy because they specified that trans women were not allowed.
Mm.
And I was very upset with this because it's a freaking concert. But... I can envision circumstances in which a group of women wish to do something that they feel is whole to the women's experience, and they want only women, and the conditions of such are, you know, the conditions are such that they feel trans women would ruin the construct that they're trying to achieve. And I am okay with that idea. And I believe if you are explicit that is your concept, I believe going under false pretenses of being cisgendered when you are not would be unethical, in my opinion. But I believe there is onus on the group to specify here's what and here's why. That's the thing. I'm okay with that exclusion if there's a legitimate reason.
It seems
which
to
is why in the concert venue it didn't work for me, because I'm like, yeah, no, you're not. It's not because you're threatened by the trans women, and you're certainly not doing anything that's going to be expressive or sharing such that the trans women harm that somehow. You're just being weird.
Well, it seems though that for, you know, you've got people who don't want to talk about transgender people, don't want to accept transgender people, or they hate transgender people. Setting those people aside and looking just at the group of people who, you know, want to be more accepting of this and you know, so on. I think the general mood right now of people in that camp is that the allowance that you just mentioned, for example, shouldn't even be made. You just shouldn't do that. That if someone says they're a woman, you know, they're a transgender person, they're a woman, they should just be treated that way.
And when we hit a point that I feel they have enough, insofar as they have common experience, I think that's great. But we are still at a point where women are treated drastically different from men in our society, and it happens from birth, and the experience is different. To the same thing that I would be okay with. Again, if there's a legitimate reason behind it, and that is explicated, a group that is exclusively trans,
mm-hmm.
for whatever reason, because that is a unique experience.
Now, so what I see is you being very consistent between what you're saying about how transgender situations are treated, but also this transracial thing, because...
And at the same time, it makes me uncomfortable as well, which is why I worry about saying these things, and worry that tomorrow I'm going to feel differently.
Yeah.
That's what's in my head, but I'll admit it makes me nervous because the whole thing becomes a necessary evil, in my opinion. I've always felt this way because these are artificial constructs that, I mean, Is the concept of a biological female of the human species a real thing? Yes. But the unique experience is in almost entirely, but definitely large part, because we as a society choose to make that difference.
That's right.
And at the point that we do stop doing that, that everybody's experience is unique, and that's, you find a group with a common thing, you don't, and then you don't exclude anybody who has that thing.
Except that, even that vision is problematic. I mean, a lot, some transgender people have pointed out how problematic that is, because what you're talking about is the gradual elimination of the gender binary. But that's something that many transgender people want to explicitly preserve.
No, and I would rather go with the gradual transition into the gender spectrum. And once we hit that point, then we're fine.
Well, and
I don't want there to be no genders. I love genders. Well, actually. I just want there to be
from a sociological standpoint, gender is a real thing. There just aren't only two of them.
Mm-hmm.
So. And nobody knows how many there are, but it doesn't matter. From a sociological standpoint, if people understood that there were probably over 1,000 genders, nobody would care how many there are. It only becomes an issue when people think there are two or even three. People want to say, "Oh, well, we need a third gender." And no, we don't want a tiny number.
It also,
we want to acknowledge that there's so many of them that we don't even want to worry about how many there
are. It also becomes an issue when we try and tie any of it to physical traits.
Well, except
because that's the thing. If we have like four genders or however many genders, and what bits you were born with don't impact which gender you're in,
well,
then we don't have to do this.
That's
anymore.
Right. From a sociological standpoint, gender would include all kinds of aspects of not just your sexual orientation, but your sexual preferences, your kinks, whatever, and whatever kind of thing you show through your clothing or your behavior to signal to other people that you're into this or that other kind of thing, that's what gender would be. Mm. And there'd be as many genders as there are people. But the point is, as soon as we realize there are so many, we'll stop making such a big deal out of it.
Yep.
And the same thing probably works with race, you know, because race, right? When you know, just like there's a spectrum, like you were saying, a spectrum of genders, a spectrum of skin colors, a spectrum
Absolutely.
Of cultural experiences.
And genetically speaking, there is no such thing as race.
Exactly.
In
so
when you get down to the genetic level, you can't tell who's black, who's whatever.
As soon as we understand, have a proper understanding of these things, it won't really be an issue anymore. But the problem, though, is, and this is a problem with the whole colorblind and genderblind concepts, is, okay, you can... First of all, it's really hard to imagine anyone being those things in our culture. And second of all...
And we all have to admit that a huge number of people are not, regardless of whether or not we think we can pull it off.
That's right. And we have to be sensitive to that. So that's what makes it complicated.
This is... A few years ago, I learned about the concept of critical race theory. I'd never heard of that before. Are you familiar?
I probably am, but I don't. I may be narrowing
this down because it was specifically a lawyer that I worked with on this. But it's the concept that it's similar to, in my opinion, it's a racial similarity to radical feminism. It's the concept that the current, well, again, in this context, judicial system is built with inherent racial bias already built into it. So it's not just a matter of the laws. It's how process works and how your race factors into that and how our society needs to take that into consideration in the due process of law.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which on its surface, there's still that part of my brain that's immediately like, oh, this is not, we should treat everybody fairly and we can't be doing things different because you're black or different because you're white. And no, the whole point is we're already doing that.
Yeah.
And we need to acknowledge that and deal with it. And that's the same thing when you do exclusionary groups of this other. But, well, and this is all hard for me because I'm very inherently about being honest. But I do understand the concept that if I look like a woman and I come to you as and don't say anything otherwise, that you assume I'm a woman,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to I come to you and very early on say, yeah, I used to be male, whatever. Regardless of your opinion, Mm-hmm. Regardless, I can even use you specifically as an example. Mm-hmm. The dynamic of our relationship will be different.
That's true.
At least at the way things are at this point, with the people we got on this planet now, the dynamic of the relationship is going to be different. And if part of what you feel you are missing, what should be your life that your body didn't match to or whatever, is that experience of that dynamic, then you don't want to say anything because you want that dynamic. But your right to swing your arm around only goes as far as the next guy's nose. And again, if there's an established group or if there are other people for whom that has significance and you are aware of that and you are still withholding from them, I have an ethical issue with that. Mm. And I don't think for a second that that woman in the NAACP didn't think people would freak, some people at least would freak out if they found out that her ancestry was Caucasian.
No, I you're probably right about that.
But I think, and I'm not sure, that I support her right to start a different group and not have to tell anybody. Well, but I don't know. It depends on...
There's nothing preventing someone with a Caucasian genetic background from leading the NAACP or any other
group
like that.
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I think the claim is even there were some people who were perfectly aware of her status and they didn't have a problem with it. But other people weren't.
Because that's the thing. When I use the transgender issue and I say I can see situations in which they would be excluded and there would be reason for it, I do absolutely feel like that should be the exception. By and large, I feel like feminist groups and even all women feminist groups should be inclusive, unless you've got a damn good reason why. And most of the time, you're not going to have that.
Well, it seems to me that we don't have to get into that.
But I'm not even particularly into a group that, I mean, I see the necessity for it. But in general, I prefer feminist groups that aren't exclusive of males or things like that.
Well, I mean, my experience with most feminist groups is they're not that way.
Yeah, so. No. Usually there's a damn good reason for it.
There's a specific thing they're trying to achieve.
The only time I've run into
any issue is with this whole gender binary thing and having that be a strong element of whatever this feminist group is sort of combating. And then sometimes some transgender individuals sort of chafe under that because of them thinking that someone is saying that, well, you can't believe what you believe or you can't do what you're doing.
At best that it doesn't matter. That happens. There's a lot of people who think that gender dysphoria is latent something else and that it shouldn't be a thing because if we would just fix that. There's a feminist line of that too, that trans women aren't really women and don't even really want to be women. They're just trying to flee the patriarchy essentially. And if we could fix the misogyny in society, they would have no need to, and they'd be perfectly happy as men. That's an actual school of thought that I hate.
I think what would really happen if we got rid of the gender binary isn't that we wouldn't have transgender people. It would be that we'd have all kinds of people, and it wouldn't be a big deal anymore. You know what I'm saying? I mean, people would just be whatever they want to be. We'd still have gender, but it would be this wide field, basically. Mm-hmm. And it's not about there not being any genders ever again. It kind of goes back to what we keep saying about representation. It's not that we have to stop telling the stories we've been telling. It's that we have to tell more stories for more people.
Yeah, that's what we always say.
Well, that's the truth.
Diversity and communication.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We're surely over time.
No, we're not over time, but we should wrap it up because I want to eat that food over there. This has been a heavier episode. Politics and other politics. No Batman. So hopefully those of you... This just means you and Jazz should really be doing more episodes of Grapevine. Because now you're just doing them on our show.
Well...
This is a long-distance episode of Grapevine here.
We were kind of doing a series and then things got in the way, and we haven't really picked it up.
Fix it. What? Jasmine, get on this. William won't do it. He never does anything. But you, yeah. Get moving.
She's got a lot of things blog, she's doing.
Go to the blog. Tell us all about this. That was to all of our listeners, not just Jazz.
Tell us all about this.
Tell us what we just experienced. And come back in a week, which for us will be 2 weeks. I think it's weird. Like us on Facebook, because I said so. Buy my book when it's out. Buy William's books now. Clifton D. Hawk. There, I said it. Now it's out there in the world. And go to bed.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.